Welcome everybody, and welcome to the inaugural meeting of the Neighbourhoods and Community Wellbeing Screening Committee. I've got a notice that I need to read out before the meeting. Please note that this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council website. In addition, please be advised that under the openness of local government bodies regulation 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any image or sound recordings is not under council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to Democratic Services officers who are administration leaders. Thank you. Well, welcome everybody. Item one on the agenda is apologies. Do we have any apologies?
No.
Everybody's here. Item two is disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Do you have any?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, under item 6, page 17 of the report, I have an interest in the Passion charity Sheffield through my affiliation with church and also all the Sheffield based charities to thank
her. Okay, thank you. Councillor Barton.
Yeah, I have number 6 because I actually played the child in my school.
Okay, Councillor
Rutherford. I'm chair of a group that is potentially put an application in for a common lottery.
Okay, and I have an interest as well, but I sit on the trustee of Perrin Hall, through the council, and I'm a member of Equality Action, but both are personal and non-prejudicial interests.
Perrin Hall and
Equality Action. Maybe someone who's quite not spotted yet.
Yeah, my apologies, I'm a trustee, this is vice chair.
Are there any others? If members do suddenly realise that they're on a board that aren't, I just declare it when we discuss the item. Just before we carry on, it's important about the first impression. I'm going to ask the Chief Executive who's here to stern between personal and prejudicial when we're discussing that item, because a lot of us are on trustee boards or are on boards that do receive money from the Farmers Lottery in one board or the other. Thank you,
Jeff. Well, I've got a personal interest if you've been involved in all the rest of the organisation anyway, but that becomes a prejudicial interest if there's any financial matters or you're about to make a decision that would be in support of that organisation or against. Obviously, if you've got that interest, you need to declare that as a prejudicial interest and not take part in any decision.
So, all members are clear? If you need any clarification further on or in the paper, just let us know and Jeff's here for that. Okay, thank you very much. Then item 3. Oh,
sorry, just to get clarity on that then. Because I'm chair of the group that is putting an application in at the moment.
That's not on tonight's agenda.
No, that's it. So it's,
in which case
it's
not
going
to be considering that under the item. So
yeah, there's no decision to be made here.
It's only if it's a matter that's actually on the board.
That's fine.
Yeah. I thought I made that clear. Get that clear for us because we're going to have this coming back and back again. So at some point there may be a prejudicial interest. So we might want to find a sub for that particular meeting or leave the meeting in fast pace. Item 3: declaration of the party whip. No declarations of the party whip. No questions have been submitted in item 4. So we move on to item 5, which is housekeeping structure and terms of office. And I have Karen Woodson, Democratic Services Manager, who will take us through that item.
Thank you, Chairman. I do not plan to go into the great detail of this particular agenda item, as we covered this in the earlier training session. So the report essentially sets out the remit and terms of reference of the new scrutiny committee in general terms, and the appendix to the report sets out the terms of reference for this particular committee. I do, however, need to highlight that paragraph 5 on the report, on page 7, does make reference to the Corporate Services Directorate. I do apologise for that. I circulated the, it is a correction, it should actually have referenced the Neighbourhoods and Community Wellbeing Directorate, and that actually lists out the various areas which are covered by that directorate. I have circulated that, and that will be put into the minutes as well and corrected. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be back to a chance to read the 3 or 4 pages to give us a steer of what this scrutiny committee is going to be about, but we're discovering it for the first time, the first meeting. So if you're unsure of anything, just raise your hand and we'll try and clarify things, or we'll get answers from officers as we go along. So moving to along, it's item six, which we've got Charnwood Community Lottery Update Report. And I have Councillor Deborah Taylor, who's the lead member on this, Bertie Graham and Julie Robinson and Mike Roberts supporting her. So I don't know who wants to go through the paper, and then we'll ask you questions. Is that okay?
So the report provides an update on the performance of the Charnwood Lottery 6 clear months after commencement of the scheme and the associated promotional activities. The establishment of the Charnwood Community Lottery was approved at the Cabinet on the 18th of January 2018, and Gatherwell were recruited to provide the running administration of the lottery. The lottery was officially launched on the 4th of September, and the first draw took place on the 29th of September. As part of the lead up to the launch of the lottery, prospective local causes were invited to two group sessions where information was provided regarding the lottery, how it works, and how the council and Gatherwell would support the groups to provide the lottery. Over 30 organisations attended the presentation, 22 were signed up for the first draw. The aim of the lottery is to facilitate support to local voluntary community sector groups. For every £1 ticket sold, 60p goes benefit local good causes. The remaining money goes towards the prizes and the administration and running of the lottery. The average number of weekly ticket sales is 720. The 2019-20 business plan has a target to reach 1,000 ticket sales a week. 16,400 has been raised to date through the lottery to support Charnwood's voluntary community sector, of which 10,664 is specific good causes and 5,736 is Charnwood's general fund, which covers all the grants that we deal together. So the Charnwood Community Lottery is currently not following the predicted trend seen with other current council lottery schemes, where the general fund takes up 60% of the ticket sales. The split we have at the moment is currently 35% good general good causes and 65% specific good causes. While this has resulted in less income coming into the general fund, it's a positive result for the good causes who have secured regular commitment from their supporters. We recognise that further work needs to be done to increase ticket sales in general, but also generate support for the General Good Causes Fund to help achieve income targets. The Good Causes registers are very diverse from their size, areas of work and support, and this is reflected in their number of supporters and ticket sales. We identified a number of groups in the report who are benefiting. Some of these groups are on track to raise between 1,800 and 2,500 during the first year. As of the 17th of June 2019, there are 51 good causes registered. There are currently 7 new causes waiting for approval. There have been 38 weekly draws, and tickets sold have been 27,390, with a weekly average of 720. The report provides a summary of both the marketing and promotion that's been undertaken today and what is planned going forward.
Thank you. Would you like to add anything before we come on to questions?
Just happy to take questions, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Right, members of the panel, this is our opportunity now to ask officers questions based on the report that has been done to this. I know Councillor Barton has circulated some questions in advance of the meeting, and the officers received the questions. Ted, would you like to ask any or all of them questions now?
We had a training session in scrutiny. We were encouraged under the new scrutiny regime to do more of our own research work. So what I did was I did some research into community lotteries, and the Aylesbury Vale was the first one, so I studied that one. Studied one of the most recent starters, which was Nuneaton, and then just picked two other, literally just two other ones that I found on Google, and compared it with Charnwood. And you can see that, and then I also called up the operator today, and she informed me that last week 457 people played. So out of the entire Charnwood relation, that it's not an exact figure because obviously you have to take into account people under 18, but But if you take that figure out of the general population, it looks at 0.28% played the lottery in Charnwood. So we obviously want to see that more. So where it goes to 0.23 and 0.24, what I was looking for was actually exactly how we're going to do this, what we're going to do, when, how much will it cost, and then whether in our work programme we can look at this to see whether it's working and the numbers are going up. Because currently, if you looked at these other ones, there's a lag. Like, for example, Nuneaton and Bedworth, which is a recent starter, has a lower population but actually has more people playing last week.
Okay. Cheers, Ed. We'll let officers and the lead member answer, and if there's anything further, then we can take it forward.
I'll just respond. It's unclear from what you sent through, Councillor Parton, whether it's the number of players or the number of tickets sold, because obviously the figure quoted for Charnwood is the number of active players, but it's not necessarily the number of tickets sold, so we're benchmarking on the number of tickets sold. So in terms of Aylesbury Vale, I'd probably say that's the average number of weekly ticket sales, not the average number of players. Obviously in terms of those, there's a range of start dates in relation to those of the lottery scheme. So Nuneaton and Bedworth is April 2018, so it's over a year, it's been operating longer than us. Of Gosport's July 2018, Bournemouth's February 2019, Aylesbury Vale is November 2015, so if you take that back to November 2015, there are only 1,500. There's a lot of anomalies to take into consideration, and we always knew that it would be a gradual growth over a period of time, and therefore, you know, what we're doing, you know, on the feedback from Gatherwell is, the feedback that we're getting from them is that we're performing in line with other lotteries, and we're outperforming them in terms of the rate of sign-ups of other organisations that are joining the lottery. We've set ourselves a target in relation to the 2019-20 business plan to reach 1,000 ticket sales per week by the end of that period. So we're recognising that we're on gradual growth, you know, and I think we recognise within the report ourselves that we need to do some more publicity and promotion, and to get councillors working for us, because I know quite a lot of you are quite proactive around that, to promote the message as well throughout the borough. And we're doing a lot of work with the voluntary community sector organisations directly to get them signed up, but we need to do a bit more work with them about how they get their supporters more proactively buying tickets as well.
Okay.
I think really as well, we need to really support councillors to promote it within their wards and get as many, I mean every group that I speak to within my ward and further around in Charlotte also will be signed up for the lottery. The two biggest people that have signed up are Bradford Park and Anstey Community Library, which are in my ward. So that proves what I'm doing to try and promote this. So I think there is some help that the councillors can give us to promote this and make sure that every group they speak to, that they raise the Charlotte lottery with them.
Cheers.
Councillor Brian. Thank you very much, Tara, through you. I think slow but sure is the way to go. It might well be really a different climate now than people who started 4, 5, 6 years ago on it, and whether they follow the same criteria as us, which I think we would have to investigate if it's like for like or it's just similar. But what I also think we have to be very careful of, we're encouraging people in a way to gamble, and so it's a fine line how we do this, that we're not being so proactive that someone's saying, well, if I buy 5 tickets, it's 20 odd pounds, or £5, or if they sign up to do it by a standing order or a direct debit at £20, £10 a month, and then find, will they remember if times get harder? Cancel that, or are we encouraging? So I think we have a balance. I think it's an excellent scheme. I think it's very good, and I too would promote it, and parents I have joined. But I think it's something that we have to be aware of, that we're not so proactive with it, that we're putting people under a pressure they may not be able to call. I think it's a fine line. And I think also it's very difficult to try and compare like with like unless you've had all the, if someone joined on exactly the same day as us, with the same cross-section of community we've got, with the same size of council and the same setup, then it's fair to compare.
Should we come back on the concern about if people were in financial trouble, let's say, and paying the lottery, what's a fair or safe fare?
And there's financial safeguards in place, as we explained in the original lottery report, about what they promote sensible gambling, and they're signed up to the Gambling Commission and they're a ratified organisation. And the voter probably knows more, but when you sign up and buy, you sign up for a period of time. It's not an automatic renewal, so there is that safeguarding as well. The safeguards in place about age limit and responsible gambling, so they follow a responsible gambling policy. So there's lots of safeguards in place around that.
The other thing with it is it's not an instant gratification process. So the lottery closes on the Friday, but the draw is until the Saturday. And therefore research shows that most people that have got an addictive nature of gambling, this would not be what they would choose to do. So from that point of view, the other thing I was just going to raise with the things that have been said in terms of the climate and stuff is, as Grants Panel, one of the reasons that we worked towards the lottery and did research into it is because we have a lot of small groups in Charlotte. So whilst ticket sales and numbers of people aren't all massive, we have got a good cross-section of groups. And where they're quite small, they're quite happy. If they're raising £100 to £150 in the year, just through a couple of people supporting them, that pays for insurance and things. So we're mindful that those organisations can't increase beyond what they're currently doing without, as you say, putting pressure. So they're quite content with that, and it demonstrates an income stream that we as Grants Panel are welcoming. We're seeing an increasing number of organisations with lottery demonstrated on their income lines, which is a real bonus. And in terms of the recruitment, we obviously, all the people that apply to Charlotte for grants, if they're eligible, we did support them to do this. So. But some of them have to run it past trustees and all sorts of stuff, and we've been invited to a couple of trustee meetings to help reassure. So it does slow down the process a bit, bearing in mind their meetings and decision-making processes. So it is a slow burn with some of the groups. Then we've got other groups that just go for it, but the bigger groups like Raggett Park have got a massive resource and a network of people that they've just tapped into, and they're feeding deer. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for the sort of commercial promotion of it, because that obviously people jump on the bandwagon. So, paying for an insurance pot for a small group is not quite as appealing, I think, in terms of.
Well, Councillor Rushford.
Yeah, just a few comments really and a suggestion. With the ticket sales at 220 average per week, we're trying to target 1,000. Just looking at, if we've got 50 good causes that are signed up at the moment, we're looking at sort of an average of 14.4 tickets per good cause. So I'm thinking, where you said obviously you want to get the councillors more involved, I really think that that's like the angle that we go after. There's 52 new councillors. Why every one of them signs up one group, we've doubled the number of groups that we've got involved. So to get to that 1,000 target, if we all get involved as councillors and try and encourage our own wards to do it, that one extra one per ward is going to smash that target. So I really think that councillors pushing it within their ward would be a really good place to start. I mean, I'm pleased to see the extra promotion is planned in anyway. I think the things that are in the sort of target plan for the next 12 months will be really encouraging. And whether we look at some ward level briefings, so if particular councillors can pull together sort of 7 or 8 local groups together in one location, whether we could get someone to come over and do, or it's like groups of wards together, so 2 or 3 wards do one group meeting, like the initial briefings that were done at the start, to get more people involved now there's a history there, people can see that it works. So I think that we can kind of like almost do like phase 2 briefings.
Yeah, fully support all that, and we need to roll that out and plan that in, because there's only so much finite human resource. Happy to support where we can.
We did mention it, we've done the briefing sessions on members' grants as well, so I took the opportunity at that. We've got second members' grants
enter this moment, is it? Member Grant training. So yes. I can endorse that.
I know I shouldn't say this, but remember with the council tax bill we used to send mail shots out, and we still do, you know, leaflets. Maybe this is something that we could leaflet this year or whenever you decide with the council tax bill, because they obviously go out to every household in Dartford. But I was going to come on to promotion, I know Mike dropped it. It's very important. I think I wasn't anti, I was sceptical when this was proposed, let's say, a few years ago. But it is small, you know. But let's be honest, 600 people paying out of a population of 166,000 is still a big market for us to tap into, but it's small still. And I was just wondering how we're not going to get to 166,000, that's nowhere near, but how do we get to 1,000, and then 15, and then 2, and 2.5? It's because the actual money itself, if you're getting, say, 30,000 from 1,000 people paying, 2,000 to 60,000, that's a lot of money going to big courses. So how can we ramp it up, as they say?
Well, I think, as outlined in the report, we've got plans in place to increase promotion and publicity within line with resources available. So we need to reach more people and encourage them to play. So we'll be continuing using social media, digital channels, members input and using their contacts involved would be brilliant. I think we've just got to continue doing what we're doing. I take reassurance when we have regular contact with the operator and we run by them our plans for comms and marketing, and their feedback is carry on. They've made one or two suggestions about possibly attending events, and they've taken that on board and we'll plan that in. But there's nothing from them which says you're missing something. I think it's about continuing, slow but steady, just making sure the growth continues to go up. I'll just touch on the council tax leaflets, and I probably have the same hesitation Councillor Fryer has raised in. We do have to walk that fine line between encouraging people to play, but there has to be some feedback about encouraging people to gamble as well. Not lots of feedback along that line, but some feedback, and I think it's one we just have to be careful around.
Good, thank you. Members, any further questions for the officers? If not, can I ask how often does this report come back to us? Is it 6 monthly or quarterly or?
This was the first plan that we had, so it's up to the committee.
Well, when you look at your work programme items, share those from the agenda, you might want to consider
Okay.
more further reports and so on.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you. We will let you know as they say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This figure, number of players last week, that is actually number of players, that's not number of tickets, that's number of players.
No, that's okay, so moving on to item 7, which is the 2018-2019 quarter four performance monitoring and end of year outturn report. And we have with us the same officers and Councillor Deborah Taylor as well as the member and Matthew Bradford's going in as well. So it's on page 18 for members. Again, if somebody would like to present the report, and then we can take questions as well.
Well, we've got several services.
Looking
over to three or four services, so I think the first thing to say is this is obviously a report that covers the previous financial year.
Yes.
And essentially it sets out how the business plan objectives were met and summarised. If you go to page 23, there's a useful summary there which identifies a number of business plan objectives that were completed. 15 and 1 marked as red, not completed. Of the business plan indicators, 8 out of 9 were green with 1 amber. On our KPIs, there were 2 red KPIs. So that just gives you a summary of what the performance was like. I understand you want to focus on the red indicators, so obviously page by page. If you'd like to call on each one, respect the relevant officers
okay.
or the member will be able to answer any questions you may have about those.
Yeah, cheers. So members of the committee, just to give you a bit of direction, so we've got the report in front of us. and the indicators which are green, if there's anything further information you want on them, but they are mainly satisfied, then the scrutiny, we probably wouldn't want to scrutinise them any further unless we want to change some of the indicators. But if there are red, so if you go through the report, the first one I see red is on page 27 to the right, regarding keeping our residents safe. So if you have a question on that, for example, you could ask the officers there, and the relevant lead or the lead member will try and answer that or give the lead an answer. So are we okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, I think this is quite a difficult one for the officers to give a full and frank answer to if we haven't got the police present and their figures, because this is tied up with, we can put all sorts of things in place. So what I'd like to know through you, Chair, is how we work with the police, and is it possible for us, maybe the next report, to have a police report? Because this is dependent on them and their method of reporting as well.
Yes, Councillor Deborah Taylor is the Chair of the Community Safety Partnership.
Yes.
We do have that report coming to our September meeting.
Yeah, I was just going to say that as part of the Community Safety Partnership, which Councillor Taylor is the Chair of, we report on Community Safety Partnership actions twice yearly, and that will now come to the scrutiny committee.
Yeah, so we'll be able to
We'll come in September with an update report on the whole global report, and normally we bring a police representative with us at that point, so you'll get an opportunity.
So that's a better time for us to scrutinise it in depth when we've got more information.
And you'll get a full
detailed
report at that point.
Thank you very much.
Do members have any other questions? And I think Councillor Brooks, you did raise one about recycling.
Yes, but some of the point further on.
Oh, okay.
The next one's page 28.
Which is the full page.
Yeah, it's quite satisfying that one. Yeah, we've got the red indicator in the Community Club on in-store paper. We do have an explanation there. Could you give us the latest on how it's moved forward from what's indicated there, if it hasn't moved forward?
That's as up to date as it is. So there's a meeting in July. Uh-huh. The trustees, in the last update of the things, we thought they got charity commission status, but unfortunately there were issues that meant they had to revise their constitution. So they've now become, to meet those guidelines, they've now become a community association as opposed to residents association. As with all community groups, when it's a big project that's slightly different, there has been some ongoing concerns amongst trustees. A lot of time has been spent on ensuring that the leases are appropriate for the buildings, etc. And again, it's council lands, and there's been we've had to deal with the scouts, and scouts then sub-lease to this group. So it's not as straightforward, it is really progressing positively now. It's just there were issues with the application and their status, which we've now addressed. So I'm hopeful that the meeting in July will have some significant decision making with all trustees present. And then as soon as the building is confirmed, obviously it's chicken and egg, so we just need to make sure, but it is on a previous footprint, so the hope is that the planning permission will be that straightforward.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we don't have any...
On the business plan indicators, they're either green or amber.
Green or amber,
the remaining
red ones are on page 34.
Key indicators, the first one is KI14 on page 34, which is substantial household waste that's going to be used recycling.
Yeah,
through you, Chair. So this one is one that's consistently underperforming. So is it unachievable? And if so, how do we move forward? Because we can keep scrutinising this, but if we can't progress and change anything, it's a waste of everybody's time, isn't it? Just coming and telling us the facts every report. So what can we do to move forward with this is it worth setting an intermediate target that's lower, that's with the aim of achieving 50% in a given time frame? Or, yeah, can I just ask for your thoughts around that?
Certainly, yeah. Through you, Chair, if I may, it's Matt Bradford, Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces. The reason that the target is set at 50% is that there is a national target,
yeah,
to get to 50% recycling and composting by March 2020. So, personally, I was reluctant to set a target that was less than the national target, even though that our performance for some time hasn't matched that. We haven't got to 50%, and there is a general levelling off and even a dip in performance, both nationally, locally, Leicestershire, and in our figures that's shown. So that is quite a challenging target, but I guess my personal view on it was that I was reluctant to set a target that was less than the national target, and that's why it is as it is.
Yeah.
I think it's a decision really for the panel on how they want to scrutinise this. Obviously, we're all keen to maximise recycling within the borough, and even though we're not hearing hitting the target, then we could analyse trends over time and make sure that we are improving going forward. I think if I could really state why that figure is going down at the moment, you may remember this target's measured by weight,
yeah,
so it's per ton, and it measures the amount of dry recycling that we collect and garden waste as a proportion of the overall waste collected. You may remember last summer was very hot, and in the middle of summer there probably was a few weeks where people didn't cut the lawn because there wasn't anything to cut, and even when you did, that grass was very wispy,
yeah,
no water content in it whatsoever. So this figure reduces because the sun shone throughout the summer, and it's not really a reflection on our performance. The other thing is that packaging manufacturers are getting quite clever at lightweighting their materials now. There are potentially some legislative changes coming forward. So packaging producers are getting better at lightweighting their materials to avoid some potential costs further down the line, both in their supply through transportation, but because there will be a time in the future where they will be charged for the amount or weight of packaging that they put on the market. So we have things like everyone used to buy glass coffee jars with coffee, and now you get refill packs, and that's just one example of where that's happening. There's also a general trend to move away from newspapers. Most people absorb news in different ways now, and that's quite a heavy proportion of the recycling that we used to collect. So it is getting more and more challenging. The target's not coming down, but it is getting more and more challenging to achieve that. And I would say unless we change our collection methods, we are unlikely to hit it.
Okay.
There are councils that get over 60% recycling, but that would involve some quite significant costs in changing our collection methods. So a lot of those councils, they have free garden waste service. That's something that the government's been consulting on over the last few months, whether we should do that. And a lot of them collect food waste separately.
Yeah.
So that comes out of your black bin, and you'd have a separate food waste collection. Those councils are quite high performing. They hit the 50% target, but there's quite a significant cost involved in delivering that type of service. We're talking well in excess of £1 million to do things like that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
it does somewhat. But I think I'll put the points back to come back to this. How much of our personal daily recycling has an impact on what we're doing? So where we've just been speaking about adding more marketing for the lottery and increasing the awareness around that, is it worth looking at increasing our marketing to educate our residents? Does that play a big proportion? in our figures?
We do education campaigns. We offer all new householders a big guide that's a guide to recycling. We go to pubs, scouts, brownies, groups, schools, yeah, things like that. We have market stalls. We do social media marketing as well. So we do a lot of marketing, but to that 5% is thousands of tons of turnaround, so it's quite marginal, the impact of that. Hopefully, working with children, we find it is a good way of changing adult behaviour, because they basically make their parents feel guilty for not doing the right thing, and we can get some behaviour change there. But it is quite a big turnaround. I would think that the only way that we would get to 50% is by having quite a significant way of changing the way that we undertake our collections.
Okay. And just one more point. You mentioned before, highlighting obviously the grass just being one issue that's had an impact on our performance, saying that our figures don't directly reflect our true performance. How can we create a figure that does?
Again, that's something that the government's been consulting over the first part of this year, to see if we can move away from these weight-based targets, if there is anything more effective. I don't know what it is, but it does seem strange to me that our performance can be impacted by the sunshine in all summer, and that's a big impact. The honest answer is that I really don't know at the moment, but that is something that the government is keen to look at, and DEFRA is working through those consultation responses at the moment, and we're waiting to see what that comes up with.
Okay, thank you.
Just picking up on the things that we can't recycle, so I know that obviously we have like a decent list when you look on our website as to the things that can be recycled, and the likes of crisp packets, pet food pouches, bread wrappers, all of those things. There are companies that can recycle those products. So TerraCycle do schemes that recycle lots and lots of different things that we don't accept in our household recycling. And is there anything that we can do to either work with TerraCycle, consult with TerraCycle, to be able to incorporate those products into what we're recycling? And crisp packets, we consume 6 billion crisp packets a year in the UK, and every single one of them goes in our landfill, other than obviously what TerraCycle have started to do with the Walker scheme. But, and then the same obviously is now happening with pet food pouches and various other things. So there's quite a lot of work going on in the private industry, and it's just what we can either learn from them or partner with them to be able to increase what we're offering to be recycled.
Through the chair, if I may, it's quite an interesting topic at the moment. So this is again something that the government is talking about at the moment. The way our recycling works is that as a borough council, we're a waste collection authority, so we collect the waste. The county council is a disposal authority, and they make arrangements for the sorting, treatment, and on sale of what we collect. So our arrangement at the minute is everything goes in one bin. It's called co-mingling, and then it goes to a plant called a materials recovery facility, and it's sorted. And a lot of the problems around what we can and can't recycle are to do with the sorting. Yeah. It's a largely mechanical. There is some manual processing in there. It's largely mechanical. So black plastic food trays, people will tell you that you can't recycle them. You can recycle them, but the materials recovery facility can't sort them because the light won't shine through. And that's what we're dealing with. I think the issue is being tackled a different way. So those materials are called composite materials. They're made of plastic and foil. So you've got two materials there, and the industrial process, the technical thing is to separate those, and that's quite difficult. And what DEFRA are consulting on with packaging manufacturers is taking composite materials off the packaging market, or making companies that produce composite materials pay a premium to local authorities and other organisations to recycle them. So what I hope is that a lot of the hard to recycle material that's on the market at the minute, these composite materials, comes out and we go back to the single material yeah. packaging that we had before, that's much easier for us to process and deal with.
That's going to take quite a while though, isn't it, for us to get to that stage. I'm just wondering whether there's some interim stage where we maybe, it's not a doorstep collection, but maybe the Borough Council partner up with them so that we create like a household recycling centre that people can go to. We create a sorting section there where people take their own things, back to kind of the bottle bank kind of situation. But you take your food pouches, you take your crisp packets, but it's all in one place. At the moment, there are locations for people to take these things, but they're all private locations. So I have to take my crisp packets to that community centre that's in Brightley, say, and I have to take my pet pouches to the pet shop that's in Syston. Just making it easier for people so that they're going to one location, they're much more likely to get involved in it if we make it easier.
Yeah, that again, that would be something that we'd have to set up with the County Council, because they'd be responsible for disposing of it and finding someone to take that material mm-hmm. and process it. And I'm not sure what the costs of that would be.
It just seems like something that we could look into to see if it's possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Going back to statistics again, like Councillor Brooks, I see quarter one was a green line, which is great. But obviously since then, significantly we've talked and really said about the cross cutting and all that. But we know we can hit that target. So what went wrong in that quarter, that maybe when the weather got a bit worse again, the people might start trimming their grass. Why is there not an upturn towards saying it's drastically improved? Because from where I'm sitting, quarter three ties in with the evaluation, you know, warm summer months and there's a dip off. But it's a drastic gap between when we hit the target and then when we've missed it significantly again. And do you have any figures to hand, and I'm sorry if you don't, that maybe suggest that green period there at the start of that yearly quarter thing was actually a significant, you know, trend, that it was hitting green or maybe an amber, whatever the amber bracket is, if there is an amber bracket? Because it just seems that we've gone from, yeah, really good, to, oh,
okay.
Yeah.
What you find with this indicator is you get seasonal trends, and that mainly is because the garden waste content within there, and what you get is quarter one, you've got April, May and June, mm-hmm. you get a lot of people doing their first cuts and getting into the garden for the first time, you've got quite a few bank holidays, and we tend to find that the garden waste arising during those months is much higher than it is throughout the rest of the year. So quarter two, July, August, September is when we have the really, really hot weather, it's quite a drop off there, and then you get into the winter months when again the garden waste arising goes down quite significantly. So this is a trend that you'll recognise year on year, that quarter one is quite hot in this trend.
On that then, and to support again what Councillor Brooks has said and Councillor Rutland, perhaps we need to have a sort of campaign or initiative which either streamlines things better, because I think if we know we can hit this target, we need to sort of find out what went so well at that time. And even if we don't hit the 50%, get to 47-48%, because to have that 5% discrepancy again, to me, it seems that as a council we're not quite doing enough to push that. And I don't sound disingenuous to anything that's gone before, but we know we can hit that target. Let's try and push towards that marker again.
We can look at particular campaigns. I think the large variations are down to garden waste, and I could supply you with some data to show that the dry recycling is pretty flat. You get the spike at Christmas, but the garden waste is the material that we get the big fluctuations with, really. We need more people to garden, or water their gardens before they cut the grass, maybe. But we can have some campaigns certainly to encourage.
Right, Councillor Fryer, then Matt
Three,
and then
Tom. All I would then say is that I don't think it's been touched on at the moment, that the other thing that we do need to make possibly even more campaign about, and again it's back to manufacturers, and I know the government and other people are looking at this, is the fact that people buy disposable nappies when they're not disposable. And new mums or old mums, they put them in the green bin, and that whole bin and that whole load is then contaminated and cannot be counted. So it's trying to get away from that type of stuff. And I think this is where, I think there are some national campaigns trying to get them rebranded, shall we say, I'm not sure. But I know that is a big problem, is, and particularly on, we've had a lot of building, so do we target the new estates we've got, and do we encourage them? Because I think it's cross-contamination of our recycling that can have a big effect on this. So that's another line. Because if we, I don't know what the levels of contamination are, but if we knew what the levels of contamination on our recycling is, that is, and what it is, that is something that we can go at, because that is correctable. That is personal choice to person, what they think is disposable in the wrong bin, and do they realise the impact of that? Because that, I don't think, they may think that bin is contaminated, but it's not. It's a whole load, which is 9,000 kilos, 8,000 kilos, something like that. That's a lot of weight. It's the same with similar campaigns that this council does do with students, but it's an ongoing thing. You have to keep hitting it. So I think contamination.
Contamination rate at the minute is about 12%.
So you add that's
12% of our recycling is not what we call non-target materials. And there's three main components. There's multiple components, but the three main ones are textiles, nappies, and food. And I think textiles is an interesting one. Many people might think that they can recycle textiles, but once you put it in your mixed recycling bin, it gets glass fragments in it, and you can't reuse that textile. So that has to have been sorted and taken out. I think with nappies and food, I think the majority of people do know what's recycling and what isn't. I think we've got a fortnightly system, and some people put materials in the wrong bin so that it goes quicker than it would do if they put it in the right bin. So if you've got nappies that you want to get rid of, you need recycling bins going tomorrow, but your black bin's going next week, I do think that there is some deliberate misuse of the system. It's very, very frustrating. We don't have any powers to fine people for contamination. There are things that we can do, but it's frustrating. But a couple of years ago, we did a Recycle Right campaign. We did a big comms campaign around those three materials. So we stick at every bin with a no nappies, no food, no textiles on the top. It had, I would say, a marginal difference for a number of months, but then it gets sort of, it creeps back up again. So yes, there is education that we can do to improve recycling, but I think there is also some deliberate misuse of the system, unfortunately.
Can I, through you, Chair, if I've just come back, the campaign where labels and stickers were put on the bins, some of us now have bins that we've had for quite a few years, is there anything coming up to reissue those stickers or do something about mine is long gone? And I actually found something the other day and I thought, I wonder if I can recycle that. And I went and had a look at my bin. You can't read the label on it anymore. So I know they go out on Zoom, they go out on new bins and new areas. But some of us that have had them from the word go, is there a method we can send them out to get that? Something could go out with council tax requests and that you can stick, or can be, or if there is a system that when the refuse people are coming round, if they've got a stack in the lorry and they think, I know it's an extra 5 minutes or 2 minutes, that bin has not got a recycling sticker on it, and just slap it on. Is that something we could look at?
Through your chair, it's certainly something we could look at. Recently, six of the seven districts and boroughs in Leicestershire agreed a common recycling list, so we all collect exactly the same things, and we are looking at standardising some of our comms, getting recycling bin stickers that are consistent across the vast majority of the county, and then we can run coordinated campaigns for stopping contamination and encouraging people to recycle the right things in that way. So it's something we're working towards. I don't have any definite dates yet, but it's certainly something that we're looking at.
Thank you. It was just to do with the reporting. Obviously there's been quite a lot of scrutiny over the reports, one quarter that's green and the others that red, and it does seem clear as to why that is now. But I just wonder whether the next time that report's run, that we have it split out, so we have what it is for dry recycling and what it is for garden waste recycling, and then obviously a total. And I think that would be a lot clearer, and we'd probably get a lot less questions over the differences between the seasonality.
This indicator is a former best value indicator that we've got from years ago that's still reporting to DEFRA every month, which is why it is as it is, and it is.